guys get anything that looked a bit like this recently?
Oh, wow.
A beautifully decorated envelope from California.
No way.
Yeah, we've had some artwork sent to us by Kelly Vivanco. Mike, explain who Kelly Vivanco is.
Kelly Vivanco is an outstanding artist based in California. She does these amazing drawings that she does live when she listens to the episodes and then posts them on Twitter.
They're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I very rarely get mail of that kind. You know? I very rarely get mail these days of any kind.
This sounds, Mike, like a shameless call out to the listener to start sending you treats. And I think it might work, and I think you might be horrified by what comes your way.
Oh, God. No, it's not that.
Another dead lamb. Please stop it with the dead lambs. Why?
My freezer is full. I need no dead lambs, thank you. Still not sure how we're going to bury or cremate or discharge into the sea the current dead lambs. No more dead lambs.
You know what, Mike? You said about not receiving posts that much anymore.
Yeah.
And it's true that we don't do it. We don't send letters, do we?
It's a lot, I'd say, Henry.
Yes.
It's a lost art.
It is, isn't it? It's one of the many, many lost arts, along with... Well,
the art of conversation is your underscoring.
The art of conversation, as I just demonstrated. Yeah. Erotic ice sculpture. Isn't it? Dog topiary.
Mm-hmm. Wattle and daub gazebos.
Yeah. No, it is one of the lost arts because it's the smell of paper, isn't it? It's the smell of the feeling of ink. it splatters all over your fingers and face. And holding up a piece of paper to the light and seeing the watermark and wondering what is that for?
What have I done?
Why? But yesterday, I can give you an example of how out of touch we are now as a culture with letter writing and using post. Because yesterday I had to send a card.
Okay.
A simple card.
Thank you card.
To a straightforward niece.
Okay, birthday card.
For her run-of-the-mill birthday.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a landmark birthday.
Six. Literally.
Oh, but at that age, Henry, every birthday is a landmark birthday.
No, you're right. Six is huge.
Six is massive. Yeah. Six is bigger than 40,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah. You're over halfway to double digits. Aren't you? Which is the big one? 10 is obviously absolutely massive. So 6 is you've passed the hinge.
I think
point
6 is bigger than 10. I'm
6. You're right. It's absolutely. Yeah. God.
6 is one of the big ones.
It's
really
fucking massive.
Yeah.
Because it's the first number that's both a prime and divisible by and even, isn't it? It's a lot of different things. It's.
Are you beginning to panic that you might have sent a slightly workmanlike card?
Well, on her first Fibonacci birthday. I know that's wrong. Don't bollock me. I don't know what it is.
You wouldn't understand the bollocking. It's a waste of time.
No, exactly. We'd all be bollocked in the dark. And bollocking should shed light.
Yeah.
On the cave wall. Yeah.
Great Springsteen song, isn't it? Bollocking in the dark.
Good card then?
Well, here's the thing.
Did it have a badge on it?
We'll get to the card. We'll get to the card in good time.
Okay. Well, I think you're hoping we're going to forget the card.
No. Well, that you'll see. This is all of this ties in, right? Everything ties together.
Okay.
Now, sending a card is one of those things. I think because it's an old technology.
It's something to which the word technology has never been applied. Keep going.
Well, exactly. It's that old. It's that old a technology.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you think is going to be straightforward, and actually it's really hard, really, really hard to send a card. And I'd forgotten how hard it was until yesterday. I thought, straightforward, card, greeting, envelope, stamp, address, box, deliver, done. Already that actually sounds it's quite a lot of steps, isn't it? There's a lot of steps in sending a card. And it's one of those things where...
There's a lot of quite basic steps. Yes.
There are a lot of basic steps, but you string them together I mean, Mike,
you've got one basic task.
You've got exponential complications, mate. Think about it. The chessboard, they're all simple moves, aren't they? Pawn moves forward. Rook moves sideways. Horse. Horse does a sort of gammy front.
A gammy dressage.
A gammy dressage. To the left or right. Castles can move backwards and forwards infinitely.
The queen's going bananas.
King's doing naff all.
So the rules are incredibly simple, aren't they? Forward, left, right. The castle can rotate as much as it wants on the spot.
It's a big move when someone sits there rotating it, isn't it? It's more psychological than anything, but yeah.
Eventually drilling down into the board itself and opening up the underboard.
That's it's time for 4D chess.
Oh no, he's undermined me. His pawns are coming up from behind. They were digging a tunnel underneath the
It's a pincer movement. It's a pincer movement.
Oh no, the pawns have exited the game and are now starting to affect my actual life. No, but the point I'm making is straightforward rules, but, you know, pawn forwards, rook left, bishop diagonal. Pawns can become a queen if they hit the other end of the board. A castle and a king can swap places, but not fully. If there's nothing in between them, if they're on the rear wall.
Not to mention the rule of en passant, which nobody understands.
What is en passant?
It's a little creepy little move you can do with your pawn, but nobody understands it, in my experience.
What does it
is
do?
That when the pawn gets to the other end and it turns into a checkers puck or something?
What is it? No. En passant is when the pawn's going past another pawn and somehow it can go diagonally behind it and the pawn disappears.
Ooh. What? Wow, I've never heard of that one.
Welcome to chess 2.0. But it is a thing. It's an absolute... You
know. And the other one, of course, is if both of your castles get to the other end of the board, into the corner squares, you
can open a gift shop.
So, yeah, the little National Trust shop opens next to it.
That's right, yeah. And that does, yeah, it does rubbers. Mainly rubbers, isn't it? But all themed to...
Or condoms.
Condoms just... and wooden swords.
Yeah, just condoms, mate. I mean, the National Trust has got a lot more cool now than it used to be, Ben. You should get down to one of their tea rooms now. It's mainly just condoms.
Tell you what, I had a cake in one recently, but I was chewing a condom. Bloody hell.
Well, it was sort of slightly wet and sort of rubbery and you couldn't digest it.
Just heavily spermicidal, yeah.
Put it this way, don't ask how they get the lemon drizzle cake so moist, just don't ask. Because the answer you'll get is spermicidal jelly every time. And they put it in the mix at the beginning, and they put it in the frosting as well. So it's you can't get
yeah,
away
don't
from it.
Stir it too much though, otherwise you lose all the air out of it, and you want to keep it bubbly and light.
Exactly, yeah. Little tip. So anyway, straightforward steps can lead to a complicated game because chess, as we know, after three moves,
you're bored.
You're bored, and you remember that actually, you know what? Red Dwarf. It was actually had good moments. I'm going to watch Red Dwarf. I'm going to watch all of Red Dwarf. It's all on iPlay.
I'm
going to watch all of Red Dwarf from the beginning again.
I watched the first episode of Red Dwarf only last week for this very reason, not because I was playing chess, but because I knew it was there.
Yeah. Well, I've actually been falling into a bit of a Red Dwarf
I didn't realize they put it back out.
Yeah, it's all up there, and I've been rewatching it. I find it very sort of comforting. Weirdly,
it was a '90s staple. Right.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing about it is that it's been no one's really known about it, but it's been going on ever since. It's still going. They're very much banging out a series a year. It's like it's never gone away. It's incredible. It's just this like I don't know,
just with zero cultural impact,
zero impact, but it's still there. Anyway, straightforward rules, e.g., chess, can lead to a complicated experience. For example, in chess, I once heard after seven moves or something, there's more possibilities on the chessboard than there are atoms in the universe.
It's got to be that. It's got to be the atoms, stars, or sand, hasn't it?
That's
what you've got to reach for. Yeah.
But it almost certainly
isn't. But it doesn't sound as good as if you say goats in continental Africa.
I think it sounds quite good, actually.
After three moves, there's more possibilities on a chessboard than potential nights out in London.
Wow.
I don't think... I don't think Henry would ever believe that a finite number could be put on that.
No one's ever going to. The other one that's often invoked, isn't it, for scale of stuff is whales, isn't it? There's more. Yeah. After seven moves, there's more possibilities. Mm.
Than the size of whales.
Yeah. it's whales and citrus fruits. Yeah, in terms of volume.
Then there are lemons in Wales, which is anyone, which is generally around nine. Bit of a cuss to Wales there, saying it's a non-citrus country.
Yeah, I was just going to let it go. But I'll sort of get you back in a way you won't realise.
I thought you were talking about the sea creature.
Well, every whale comes with nine lemons inside. Yeah. Self-basting.
It's the only seafood.
I thought it was a terrible indictment on how many lemons we're throwing into the sea.
Oh, I see.
Which, of course, they can't dissolve, can they, net lemons? They're completely non-biodegradable. Look at the waxy... Think about the waxy, plasticky skin on lemons. No way they're dissolving.
They just get stuck in the whales, and it's tragic.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a whale straining to shit out a lemon? It's horrible. Coming out of its blowhole. I know they don't shit out their blowhole, don't bother.
Now, the point I'm making is simple moves, complex game. Yeah,
we've got the point.
Chess, yeah. Othello, and I'm going to say people making love.
No.
Sorry, no one's going to hear that off you, I'm afraid.
No.
Okay, so that's one where even that, for example, that's one where we say...
Also, making love, for me, simple steps, simple experience.
Nourishing and fulfilling. Straightforward. Like eating a raw carrot.
John hummus? No thanks. Do you want to peel it? No thanks. Do you want to wash it? No.
Are you finding
just taking
it
out of the ground?
Are you finding this experience a bit too crunchy? No, it's fine. Why are there green, sort of green strands coming off it? Don't worry.
I think I can remember why I normally boil this, Ben.
So, I suppose they say the uglier ones are better for you. Is that the thinking behind this?
Tell you what, if we're still in the EU, there's no way you'd be able to get away with a carrot like this.
Well, imagine Nigel Farage doing this. I already was. That's how I stopped myself from finishing the carrot too fast. Oh. Really, for me, it has the opposite effect. What are you on about? I don't know. Good stuff. Anyway, so I thought I'd buy a birthday card, right, for my niece. Be simple, straightforward. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I pop out. I get, as we've discussed already, I'm now using the Santander bikes. Mm-hmm. They're quick, they're fast, they're efficient, they're easy, and they're good value. Last week, I left one outside my parents' house for 2 hours. It got nicked. I'm going to get charged 300 quid. But oh, no. Apart from that, you know, that's teething trouble. The fact is, I'm on Santander bikes. I'm taking them around town. I'm living my best London life, right? That's what I'm doing.
And what's it going to cost? £300 a week? What's that?
What, if I lose one a week? Yeah, £300 a week. I mean,
$1,200 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, 14 grand a
that's
year.
That's nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. Well, the rate of inflation these days, it's not even worth that anyway, so it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? It may be worth anything pretty soon. So I pop out. I think right, I'm working. I've got a lot of work on at the moment, right? Hmm. Got deadlines. Yeah. But also, you know, it important matters to me. Send a birthday card to my niece. It's important. It's the day before as well, so I've cutting it fine, but the postal service works first class. I get there next day. Yeah, straightforward.
I mean, that has recently been in the news, how rarely that actually happens. But yes, carry on.
Yeah, but throw the dice. Yeah, if you didn't throw the dice, you can't play the game. So I was going to throw the dice. Now, I think to myself, pop out. I've got a lot on, but just pop out. How hard can it be to send someone a card? It can't be that hard. So I pop out. I get on a Santander bike. Mm-hmm. Put what do I put into my phone? WH Smith. All right. I find the nearest WH Smith to me.
Retro choice.
Well, I thought, actually, I just sort of forgot, where do you get a card? Because it's another one of these things, buying a card and sending a card. It's one of these things where it feels straightforward, but then as soon as you start hitting up against the problems, it's like, I can't remember, where do you get cards? I mean, where do you get cards? Exactly. Well, you don't know, do you?
I like John Lewis cards.
Okay, well, John Lewis is a long way. Anyway,
Can I predict your first problem?
Okay, yeah.
You reach the W.H. Smiths. All the cards say something like, have some Prosecco on your birthday, you fat slag.
Yeah.
Because cards in general have become far too mired in the kind of slightly ironic, booze-soaked kind of
hey, enjoy the cake, although you'll probably shit yourself after eating it, won't you, you old bastard. Stupid old bastard.
I would love to know, actually, from principally Americans who listen, I know we've got a few, is this a British...
good point.
The thing? Emotional assault card.
Yeah, because that can't exist in America. I can't imagine an American person buying a card that says...
They just have alcohol problems or incontinence.
They wouldn't understand it.
And they're way over the hill.
Yeah.
They would. Americans just find it incredible when a British person is just a tiny bit self-effacing. They find that they can't get their heads around that. if they say something like, tell me about yourself. And you go, I just do a bit of this and that. What are you talking about? You're the king. You're the best. You're the master. You know what I mean?
I've had experiences, a small number of experiences, like work experiences, where I've had Zoom meetings with American executives.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean.
And if you're a tiny bit self-effacing, you can see them going, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not very good at that, then. Yeah. I can just take it on face value.
Yeah, because in Britain we go, oh, well, you know, silly old me, I've made a thing. And that's Sir Norman Foster announcing, you know, he's built finally built a bridge from Scotland to Land's End. He's done it. And it's like, oh, well, I've kind of made a little bit of a thing, haven't I? But that's how we talk about our achievements, isn't it?
Yes.
So if an American asks you about a project, you'll say, yeah, no, it's okay. You know, well, yeah, I was quite happy with it. Yeah, it's right. Yeah. They'll be thinking, why is he only quite happy with it? There must be something wrong.
Why has he described his script that he's trying to sell us as shit? What's going on?
Yeah. Why has he written, I loathe myself in lipstick on his forehead? Well, actually, Ben, you're not wrong, but I had some problems before that, which is, okay. I was in the, so basically, I found myself in, I was in the city, right? I was in the city of London. So I was in the financial district, which is one of those places where you think you find everything, but actually it doesn't have that many practical things, the city. It's like, you know, you can invest in a country or whatever. You can sort of make sort of global financial decisions and impact, but can you, you know, pop out and get yourself a Twix or whatever? Not so much. So,
not unless it's made out of pure cocaine,
baby.
Yeah, but is that a surprise though? I think people are spending their day laundering cartel cash. They're not popping out for a Twix, are they? Someone else is doing that for them.
Yeah, and no, I should have realised that. Oh, by the way, I also. Just another little detail I forgot. There was a bad omen which happened, which was, to start with, when I got my Santander bike, what I've realised, what people do is you test out for a good one. Mm-hmm. And so what happens, you feel it's a bit like buying fruit. So you go up and down the row. It's got to be right. You're squishing. So I'm squishing them. You feel the legs. Not the legs. You feel the...
That's a horse, Henry. Yeah. Or Santander horse fruit, of course. Oh,
that's where... Now that's when the rider hasn't got off yet. Can you let me get in? I'm still on the bike.
He's tested to see how toned the former rider is as they're putting it back in.
Yeah. Do they have a good musculature? Do you want to be, you know, do you want to be seen to share a bike with that kind of person? Mm. So you test out the wheels. You test out the brakes. And you just sort of feel it. And basically, there was one that was the perfect bike, and it wouldn't let me take it out. So that was bad. I had to take a slightly gammy one. Mm. Which had slightly flatter tyres, right? And as I cycled off, the other thing which happened was suddenly the weather changed. It went from quite warm to chill, grey, and within a few pedals, I was getting rained on. So I had that slight feeling of doom. Do you ever get that? Mm-hmm. That this is a doomed mission.
Yeah.
This is going to be a cluster doom. Mm-hmm. The bike, I had a problem hiring the bike. The weather's changed.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pop out for 20 minutes, but things are starting to signal that there's a tornado of doom coming. So I had that sort of, that was in the back of my mind. So I found myself, I found this this W.H. Smith, who was in the city, and I got to it, and it took me quite a while to find it. The city is very labyrinthine. Google Maps doesn't work well in the city for some reason. There's a lot of...
It's because the moral compass is pointing the wrong way.
Yeah, excellent. Damn right. But there's a lot of things like Leatherman's livery. There's a lot of old trade guild halls. There's those guilds. There's like...
The guilds are still there, are they?
Yeah, there's a lot of guild building. There's a lot of things like Tannerman's Alley. You'll find yourself in little roads.
Yeah.
It's really hard to keep track of these little wine... Or there are things like Cheese Street, things like that. Like,
and there's signs for things like the excellent company of the watchmakers and stuff like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. There's bits of Roman wall, and at the same time, there's these like futuristic, like glass and steel, like, you know, almost like the abstract buildings that just seem to exist in a sort of. There's a lot going on, and I'm pulsing.
All in the shape
that.
Of Masonic symbols.
All these Masonic symbols. There's a lot of buildings being built. There's stuff going up. There's cranes. There's activity. There's life. But at the same time, there's no WH Smith. I can't find the WH Smith, right? I'm struggling. How do you buy yourself a bloody greetings card in this world? Is there space in this world for greetings? Is there space for nieces? Is there, you know, there's a lot here. I'm going through the veins of this town. This town's been around for a long time, yeah? There's ancient Roman wall. There's futuristic banks. Whose town is this? These are the questions that are going around my mind, yeah. Who does London actually belong to? Am I part of it? Or, you know, what am I? I feel like I'm a little red blood cell passing through its veins. That's how I feel. I'm a little red Santander bike. Global investment, secure future, bringing businesses and families together. Also, there's Pretz fucking everywhere. Like, so many Pretz.
Calling to you. With a siren song.
They're starting to freak me out, the Pretz, because I've, as we've discussed, I'm now subscribing to Pretz. But the amount of Pretz, it's like there are Pretz being built, there's Pretz going up, there's Pretz everywhere. It's a bit, it was a bit like, Don't Look Now?
Mm.
The film Don't Look Now. I've seen it, Ben.
Were you being followed by a Pret in a red coat?
Everywhere I turn, there's another red Pret star. These sharp, clean lines of the Pret star. Anyway, I found the W.H. Smith. I walked in. I walked in with hope, thinking, "This fine, I can do this." The day has felt a bit doomy. There's been the Santander, there's been the weather, there's been the amount of Pretz. I walk in, I think, this is going to be fine. I look around me. I'm in literally the small... I'm not exaggerating, the smallest W.H. Smith I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievable how small this was. I mean, I'm just letting that sink in, yeah?
I'm finding it fairly hard to... I mean, is it like a phone box?
It was almost like a sort of pair of trunks. It was sort of like...
Just being carried in the palm of someone's hand.
It was such small... And again, I thought this is more doom... The doom... You know that feeling of doom momentum?
Yeah, sure.
Momentum doom.
Steadily increasing sense of dread.
Yeah. You know, like when you're having one of those days where everything, it just starts to snowball. I said to the woman, "Is this the smallest?" I said to the woman, "Is this the smallest W.H. Smith of all time?" And she actually laughed. She took it quite well. She said, "What do you need?" I said, "Greetings cards." I didn't even think they'd have them, but she pointed to an area bottom right of the till, practically on the floor. And Ben, it was exactly what you said. They had about 12 inches of shelf space for cards, and it was all, as you say, Ben, it was exactly. You old bastard! you never expressed yourself to me growing up. So why the fuck have I got to do this to you? So do you even deserve this card? And it's got a little picture of a mirror on the front. And it says, "Yeah, take a good look at yourself, you git."
Pissed up, flatulent git is what you can see here. Happy birthday.
It was all that kind of thing.
Because I guess also in the city of London, most people receiving or sending a greetings card is an overworked, you know, middle-aged, balding man.
Mm. Yeah, all right, I'm right here, mate. Come on, sit down. anyway, okay, so I then get back on the bike. I don't have to hire a new bike because now that I know that my bikes get nicked, if you don't dock them, I had to go and get another bike. I undocked another bike. I then cycled towards the West End. So I'm now going from sort of from like financial district, the city, where money's quite abstract, and we're talking in like huge quantities. We're talking the future. We're talking shares and gilts and stuff. Into the, more of the teeming, the West End. So trade, people, yeah. Stuff you theater. Can actually theater. Things you can pick up, things you can pick up and hold, like a ticket to Phantom of the Opera. You know what I mean? Stuff, actual stuff that you can real. Yeah. London, yeah. Union Jack t-shirts. I got to I found a Waterstones. Oh no, sorry. There's quite a few stages to this story, sorry.
Presumably there's a terrific payoff, though.
Oh, yeah, oh, but you wait. Now, I'll wrap it up. I then went to where I knew there was a
this
bigger
This has got
bit.
Kind of Peter Jackson trilogy written all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're kind of just at the end of film one in a way there. But everything is set up. It's so perfectly set up. This is you're going to get the card. It's all perfectly set up. So I then cycle to... I then cycle to another bank, to another where I know there's WH, which is near Chancery Lane. So we're on the cusp, in a way, between the city and the West End. Well, we have passed the Dragon's Threshold. The city, the city is guarded by statues of dragons. So whenever you pass into the city of London, there's a dragon statue. If I pass out of the Dragon's Threshold, over the Dragon's Threshold,
okay.
I pull up. Okay, and this is what I do, right? When there's a doom logic, because I had a doom logic. There was sweat. There was rain and sweat on me. I was supposed to be popping out for 20 minutes to sort this out. I was already 25 minutes deep into this mission, no closer to achieving it. I did this kind of crazy thing where I just threw the dice. I was like, I'm pretty sure there's a big WH Smith up there. You know what? I'm going to dock my Santander. Just dock it, and trust that the WH Smith is there. It was almost asking. I think the trouble is when you're in a doom logic. On a day, you start taking risks that actually can accelerate the doom. Dock to the Santa. Sometimes people do clear their throats out of sheer tension, don't they? Yeah.
I say, Henry, not wanting to make the story any longer, W.H. Smith is such a weird choice of place to look for because it's...
Was that about... Where'd you
go? It's like Britain's most ailing business.
It's so ailing.
Like, when you go in them, they've got this real sense of like
so
rundown... Often like 80s carpet, everything's for some reason really expensive.
It doesn't know what it is, WH Smith. It's trying to, and for years they tried to keep themselves going by simply offering you bigger and bigger amounts of chocolate for less and less money. You'd go in to buy some Tic Tacs and they'd say, would you like a copy of the Sunday Telegraph with that? Yes. They just do like really weird
and 3 yard square of Cadbury's caramel. Would you? Yeah.
And do you want Nigel Mansell's autobiography? No. They haven't got really old books they haven't sold for like 50 years that are just sitting there.
The cards, the chances of you getting a card that doesn't already have a pre-written greeting in it as well are almost zero. Never mind what's the offensive remarks on the front.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know what to do, right?
It's going to be specifically for a sort of 47th wedding anniversary or something like
that. Yeah. Well, I was still hopeful that I could sort this out. Anyway, I docked my Santander, ka-chunk, it docks. I walk towards the WH Smith. There's the Boots. I remember the Boots. There's the mini Sainsbury's. I remember the mini Sainsbury's. It's the Boots. It's the mini Sainsbury's. It's the WH Smith. It's an empty lot. It's vacant. It's closed down. It's the business model doesn't work anymore. It's like Woolworths or Arprice. It's over. Move on. It's gone, right? As you say, Ben, it's gone.
You were essentially trying to buy a greetings card from the past. Is your problem.
There was just an empty space, an empty vacant space with a copy of Nigel Mansell's autobiography, just one sitting in the middle of it.
And a ringing phone next to it.
And trussed up like a turkey and hanging from the ceiling, upside down, the unmistakable moustache of Mansell himself. How the hell have you got himself into this pickle? Well, who knows? Find out next week.
Damon Hill's done it again. The old game of cat and mouse that those two have been in now for 25 years.
It was never about who had the fastest car. It was much deeper than that with Mansell and Hill. Much deeper. They'll still be fighting in Valhalla itself. the WH Smith's closed down. Fine. You know what? I'm in London. There's options. I'm in the West End now. Yeah, there's a mini.
Well, this is what's weird about this story. And you're surrounded by hundreds of places you could have bought a card at any one time in the story.
You must have been within spitting distance of about 1,000 stations.
Water, surely. Everywhere. The Sainsbury's. Of course, Sainsbury's now sells greetings cards. I'll be fine. She's only six. It'll be fine. I mean, last resort, I'll get her a good luck with your latest batch of hemorrhoids, you disgusting old fuck card, and I'll just doctor it. I'll doctor the card.
But that's the thing, you're also a professional illustrator. Did it not occur to you at any point just to make your own card with a piece of card that you must have in your house?
I don't have
somewhere.
Any pieces of card. I made a decision at a point, which is quite mean-spirited of me, actually, to not make people homemade greetings cards, because where's it going to stop, Mike? where will it end? Do you know what I mean? I made a decision early doors about that, which maybe was mean-spirited of me. Anyway, but I do a little pick on the inside. Yeah. So anyway, Sainsbury's. Mini Sainsbury's. Fine, mini Sainsbury's. I walk up to mini Sainsbury's. You know what? Sometimes you're actually better off in places like Exeter and Cardiff, because sometimes being at the very cutting edge of the future, it's actually, for all intents and purposes, 2024 in London. It is. I'm sorry, it just is. Yeah? I go to the Sainsbury's. Oh, that's weird. This Sainsbury's has kind of electric barriers to go in and out. Oh, that's weird. There's no staff in this Sainsbury's. There's just a tired-looking woman standing just next to the electric barriers. It's a future Sainsbury's.
Was it Sainsbury's HQ, the office?
Well, I'm coming on to that in a minute. That's the next chapter, mate.
I know that's in the area.
What next? Wait. So anyway, this was basically a futuristic Sainsbury's where you walk in, you don't pay for anything with your hands.
Does this story end with you having a duel in Sainsbury's HQ with the CEO?
it was a futuristic. Have you ever seen? They've got some Amazon shops. They've got a few of these in London now. Where you don't pay anything. You walk in, you pick up some stuff, you walk out, and it gets charged to I don't know.
Meow. To the microchip in your spine.
It gets charged to my... yeah, exactly. So A, I can't be arsed with that. B, I could see it's not going to have cards in that kind of one, because it's beta testing. It's just sort of simple veg. So right, I can't go there. Right, I've docked my Santander, yeah? It's a hassle to undock another one. I'm now quite far away from anywhere. I'm a long walk up to... I mean, I could walk to Holborn, take me 12 mins. Right, I'm 35 minutes into my 20-minute lunch break here. Yeah? I'm just probably only into act one out of this five-act anecdote as well. So,
oh, God.
Right, what I need is a big Sainsbury's. I put Sainsbury's into my Google. Opposite! There's a big... I look up, huge orange letters. There's a huge Sainsbury's. Yes! I cross the road. I walk in. Why aren't there any tills? Why isn't there the smell of bread? Bakeries. Why aren't there any trolleys? Ben?
It's Sainsbury's HQ.
It's the headquarters of Sainsbury's. Another thing which can happen to you living in London, which is that... I mean, a multinational simply will not have its HQ in Exeter. It won't happen. Yeah? So that will never happen to you, Mike.
Unless it's selling chemicals for dipping sheep into. In which case...
Yeah.
There's probably a number of companies based there.
Anyway, it's the headquarters of the same. Now, I've been on the other side of this equation because I once worked as a receptionist at the headquarters of B&Q, which also isn't a B&Q. But that, we won't go into that now. So, I now know I'm in a doom spiral, yeah? It's one of those days. Mm. Obviously, I look at my phone, the battery's now going down. But, I mean, Mike, I know how you feel, Mike. It was but Mike's really struggling with this anecdote. I know you feel it, Mike. You feel it very, very vividly when I tell one of these stories. Right.
Your phone's running out of battery. You've got your wallet.
There's a Sainsbury's.
That's your only source of money. It runs out of, you've got to get a temp job at the HQ of Sainsbury's. Hoping they're paying cash.
I'm going to have to restructure their business so that they do sell cards in the mini ones. That's the best, honestly, my best bet for a solution to this right now.
But from the starting point of a receptionist,
I'm going to work my way up.
To promote yourself to the strategy department. You're going to need an MBA at least at some point.
I'm going to have a sexy idea to get things going, which is something like sausage rolls, but the other way round. That's right. Pastry roll. It's a thin slither of pastry encased in a sausage. Yeah? Something big. I'm going to have something big and sexy. I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to put a lot of
Let's get you quickly promoted then.
Yeah. Whew, there was a moment of calm, a peace. I realised I'm trapped between a Sainsbury's that is too small and literally the HQ of Sainsbury's. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm just going to have to do it, aren't I? Yeah. It's come to this. I'm going to have to take a bus to Holborn. Yeah. Bus to Holborn.
What to say?
Yeah, it's a great cliffhanger.
The thing is, you're already...
It's almost a bit of a cliche, as a cliffhanger.
I know, it's overused, so, isn't it?
It works.
But also, because I know the area quite well, you're already in Holborn.
Well, yeah, but close to Holborn.
Goes into central Holborn. You're in the outskirts of Holborn at the moment.
I'd have to go to right into the absolute beating heart of Holborn itself.
Okay.
So that I'm talking Southampton Row. I'm talking Tesco Express, Pret a Manger.
Well, there's another Sainsbury's opposite the tube station.
Another Sainsbury's opposite the tube station. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I get on the bus to Holborn. I mean, is this okay? I'm going on. This is taking quite a long time now.
And further away from the 18 or 19 or so station as I can think of off the top of my head on Charing Cross Road.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, at this point, I wasn't thinking straight. I knew I was in a doom spiral. I was just going to have to work on instinct. I knew I couldn't think my way through this. I was going to have to feel my way through it. I got to Holborn. Waterstones. Brilliant. Hadn't thought of it. It came at me from from left field. But there, bookshops. I went to Waterstones. Fine. I got a card. Brilliant. It had a crab on the front, an octopus. Fun card. Bright colours. Sorted.
Mm-hmm.
Next problem, which happens when you buy a card. This is why it's such a difficult thing to do. Sending someone a card is not straightforward, I would argue, is put a stamp on it. Where do you get a stamp? Nowhere in the UK sells stamps. Stamps are no longer sold. Stamps are found or acquired.
In a great aunt's handbag.
Yeah. I don't know where to buy... Where do you buy stamps?
I've got some stamps in my wallet.
The post office.
Yeah. Well, okay. Post offices are unworkably queued up in general, aren't they? They're not really workable. They're not really not on London time. Maybe in Cardiff, you go, oh, I'll go down there, have a chat with the lady there, probably chat to some people.
Our post office, Henry, is within a WH Smith.
Bloody hell.
Literally.
That's extremely convenient. I like that.
Yeah. Which, again, is within a small provincial-style shopping centre.
I think, you know, in some ways, the old ways are better, because I think London... I've got to say, it pains me to say this, is it a city fit for purpose, I would say, today? Because, well, put it this way. Wait for part two out of 12 of this story, because... I said to the guy in Waterstones, do you sell stamps? Expecting a no. Yes. Okay, cool. But I remember, it's a doom day. We haven't got any first-class ones. I've only got second class. I'll need first class for it to get there the next day. Fine.
Hang on. The answer to your question, where do you buy stamps, was the place you were in.
Yeah, it turned out they did sell stamps. I thought that was good news. Right. I was surprised at how convenient that was. But, of course, they didn't have first-class stamps in. He had second-class, needed first-class for it to get there the next day. At that point, I sort of admit defeat on the day. I'm 50 minutes into my lunch break, and supposed to be 25 minutes. I read essentially the day's a write-off. I Google a post office. I walk to a post office. Massive queue, obviously. I'm in the queue. A post office employee comes up to me and says, would you, what are you here for? I said, I'm just buying stamps. He went, oh, we do sell them at the machines around there. I went, oh, okay, that sounds good. And he went, but do you want them in a booklet? And I said, well, yeah. Oh, he said, well, I'm afraid from the machines, they just come in a large sort of tranche. You just get like a tranche of, like a big tranche of stamps. What are you supposed to do with that? That means
you only needed one.
I know, but I thought I've got to get a booklet here so I can to stop this happening again in future.
Right.
Whereas if I get a tranche that's just floating around. Anyway, so I get to the front of the queue, get my stamp. Okay, now I've got the stamp. I've got the address, which is something I never used to have because I've been through these kind of issues before. I've got the address saved in my phone. What I need to now, I'm going to have lunch out. That wasn't the plan. I'm going to go to a Pret. I'm going to have lunch and I'm going to write the card. Go to the Pret, get myself a chicken, Korean chicken wrap. Fine.
Could definitely have swerved past that. Keep going. Yeah.
Okay, the art of the storyteller.
It's actually the end that you know.
Unless it's pivotal later on.
You know, James.
Unless this is Chekhov's chicken panini.
It's true that you'd never see James Bond or any detectives eating a chicken wrap, whereas most people eat a chicken wrap at some point in the day. It never turns up in a story, does it? I mean, we've all had chicken wraps.
It's always in the first pass assembly. I think it just gets edited out later on.
So anyway, open up the card. The card is not quite what I was expecting. It's multi-layered. It's not like a card you open. It's got different layers of seafood. So on the front,
it's a seafood platter.
On the front, it's a seafood platter. You open it up, it's a dressed crab. Open it up, it's a crayfish medley.
All the way down to the central cooked bream in the middle.
Which was swallowed a pound of happy birthday paella.
You've got to send it quick. It's got to stay fresh, this card, because it's lethal very, very fast. No, so open it up. There's only a small... It's like a pop-up almost. There's different levels. You open it up and you get to the middle and there's a little square to write in. So normally I do a little picture. There isn't room for that, but fine. It's too late now. I'm not going back. I mean, I'm actually starting to think now. I need to wrap this up just because I'm probably going to tell this to people as an anecdote. And it almost for their benefits. I need to stop doing things. So I just write happy birthday in funny lettering. I look at the front, the card says happy birthday. So essentially the card on the front says happy birthday. You open it up and I've written happy birthday inside. I've not added to that thought. I've not embellished it. Fine, whatever. Lots of X's. Love, Henry. It's getting the card out that, you know, send is the main thing. Close it up, put it in the envelope. Address goes on. Fine. I'm back on a Santander bike now. Oh, finding a postbox. How do you find a postbox? I mean, how do you find a postbox?
Well, they're famously highly visible.
Yeah, they're highly visible.
and ideally well distributed.
And they're sort of everywhere, isn't it?
Throughout any metropolitan area.
Yeah. So the idea is you're just supposed to sort of walk and you just come across one because there's so many of them.
Yeah. Not so in London.
I probably should have done that, but I decided to Google postbox and on my Google Maps. I found a postbox. I cycled to it. I'm now like an hour and a half into this experience. It's been
amazing.
The day's been a writer, but finally I've got the card. I go to the postbox and in it goes in that slot. You know, it's 2 p.m. This is going to get the next day because last post, last collection, and I just double check it on the postbox, last collection, 9 a.m. That is not a thing. I've never seen that in my fucking life. 9 a.m. What? Last? Are you bad? Who's that for? Rats. Who's up at that time? Rats. It's just London's rats. Who's up at... So it goes in, and it almost as it ka-chunks into that metal box, that this old British wartime tech metal act cannot be penetrated. In it goes, ka-chunk, 9 a.m., last collection. If you want
to... only be opened by extremely peculiar, sort of four-foot-long, thin steel key. That's it.
which I'd have to go back into the city to go to one of the old Keymans.
You'd have to swear allegiance.
Keymansmith.
You'd have to go through the rigmarole of the induction ceremonies.
And by that point, actually, I wasn't that pissed off. I was like, you know what? I've done everything. The card is now guaranteed to not get there tomorrow after all this. Mm. But if I could entertain just one person with this tale, it would have been worth it. So the jury's still out.
Does she live in London?
Yeah. I mean, I could have cycled there and done it easily in about... quarter of an hour, cycle to the actual address where it was going. Now I come to think of it. But anyway, whatever. I mean, it's a shame. Yeah, it's a sad ending.
And an absolutely episode-killing 45-minute-long intro. Thank you, Henry. Okay, let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Tabby from Edinburgh.
Thank you, Tabby.
Hi, Tabby.
Is urban legends.
Feels like this could be an entire podcast series, urban legends. Probably is. Urban legends is one thing. What about rural legends? do you get rural legends?
And that pig had two faces.
So you do get epileptics, but it's always that, isn't it? But the animal can vary. And that sheep, for example, it could be, and that sheep had two pig's faces.
So what is the definition of an urban legend? Is it like
the sort of friend of a friend of a friend tale?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually told as fact until someone in the gathered audience goes, bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. Or someone goes, no, hang on, that happened to a friend of mine as well. Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
We both must be friends with the same person. But what are the big hitters of urban legends?
There's some quite scatological ones.
Yes, they're always a bit gross. So this is not our fault. Some of these stories are a bit gross,
yeah.
Is it?
Because there's the sort of glorious first date, the non-flushing toilet one.
Yes, that's the one you always hear where they throw the poo out of the window. Are you aware of this one?
Guys, I've stopped recording.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's my fucking phone. It's done that thing again.
Can you sort that out?
But I think it's been going till pretty recently. Sorry. I'll start recording now. Yeah?
Okay.
We haven't lost long at all.
Henry, are you aware of this one, the throwing the poo out of the window?
No.
Is it putting a poo in your handbag?
No, that one.
I think it normally ends with, it's normally someone else's flat, right? The guest after a great, great day, great one-night stand. This is the one.
Yes. Yes.
Non-flushing loo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bagged up, but then there's usually some error involving keys and leaving the door and leaving the flat and then accidentally leaving in the wrong bag on the kitchen table rather than succeeding in throwing out the window. I think that's – so it looks as if you've sent the ultimate insult. But there are variations. It's variations on a theme, right? People have their own little – twist.
So do you think people that we've said enough that people actually know what we mean there? Or I mean,
I would such bet a universal story. 99% of listeners would have come across that story and would have come across it told as a friend of a friend type.
But it's amazing. So these stories aren't exactly written by anyone, are they? They sort of bubble up. They're kind of lore, are they?
Maybe they're lore.
Or they're in the unconscious. Are they like the collective unconscious that kind of like bubbles them up? And it's kind of like,
so if you get everyone in the UK and you boil down what their mind is sort of doing in the background,
yeah,
it's thinking about doing a shit, not being able to flush it, and then leaving it in a bag on someone's kitchen island.
So a different nation would have a different,
yeah.
If you think of urban legend, something else would come up first. But that came up. It certainly came up first in my mind.
No, I think so. So basically, the people of Britain are worried on some level. There's a kind of ambient, constant worry about non-flushing toilets that's going on, and it's to some degree the energy that sort of powers our nation.
There are kind of more international ones I'm thinking of. So the idea that Walt Disney had his head frozen.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's good.
That feels like an urban legend to me.
Yeah, the dead celebrity subgenre of the urban legend.
Are there other dead celebrity ones you can think of? There's what's the name, isn't there? Catherine the Great dying while tracking a horse.
Yes.
Yes.
So is that an urban legend or is it real? It can't be real.
Oh, yeah, but then... That's an urban legend, but that ties into an act to a myth, which again suggests that's something in the kind of human unconscious, because the myth of the Minotaur was created, wasn't it, where someone wanted to have sex with a prize bull.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yes, there was a prize bull. It was probably Zeus or something in the form of a bull. I can't remember. But and Icarus, the essentially the Dyson, the James Dyson of ancient Greece, Icarus...
Will one day Dyson suck himself into a Dyson and die?
He flew too close to the skirting board.
So basically Icarus had tried to design the first bagless bull. she this woman got Icarus to design a bull sort of contraption whereby she could be in the bull, in dressed up, essentially she could be sexed up as a dress, as a sexy, she could be dressed up as a sexy bull.
Right.
See what I mean? So a kind of bull.
The Minotaur is the offspring of this union, isn't it?
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Yes. So the bull, the sexy bull that she fancied, then had sex with her, thinking it was having sex with another bull.
Oh.
But it was her dressed up. No, not another bull. Sorry. Well, no, I mean, a bull with a cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that created the Minotaur. So, you know, it shows. Do you want to dabble in these things?
Oh, they tend to be cautionary tales, sure, if that's your point.
So, for example, obviously, obviously very similar to James Dyson. He once saw a Hoover, Henry Hoover, who really, really wanted to have sex with it.
It was actually Aphrodite dressed as a miniature car Hoover.
Well, he dressed himself up as a Hoover.
Right.
Well, he created a Hoover outfit.
Waiting for a god to bang him.
Yeah.
Which is why there's, to this day, a monstrous Hoover monster lurking in the labyrinthine tunnels under the Mendips in the Somerset.
That's right. And every year, James Dyson has to send 16 tons of...
Virgins.
to the nearest ton. For that beast to Hoover up. Yeah, so is that an urban legend? Catherine the Great?
Maybe, I don't know. It feels like I don't know if it's too far in the past. But maybe I'll certainly accept it. Because in lore, I don't know, I think of urban legends as things that are happening now.
That your mate says that they know someone who disappeared.
Yeah, like it's the kid at school who says, oh, if you go through that underpass under the A379 or whatever, that's where a boy was strangled.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
in the 70s, and you can still hear him screaming. And every year on this date, a kid disappears, and then you dare each other to go through it on that date. Or it's that kind of stuff. But if you widen out into lore, then you got your sort of Beasts of Bodmin, haven't you? And your alien,
the Chupacabra.
Yeah, all that stuff. It's quite fun.
Papacabra. Who's Papacabra?
The Chupacabra.
El Chupacabra is a sort of kind of Latin American swamp man beast.
Okay. The Slender Man. You know about Slender Man?
And what's Slender Man? That does sound quite spooky.
Slender Man is a kind of spooky figure that appears in the back of photos, I think, or something.
To do what?
Oh, it's kind of sort of photo bombing, sort of spooky photo bombing.
I've got another great one.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
But again, it's not very savoury. A lot of these are quite unsavoury.
Mm.
The idea that either Prince or Marilyn Manson...
had a non-functioning toilet flush.
had ribs removed so they could self-fellate.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That feels like quite a solid urban legend.
Yeah.
That's a solid, solid urban legend. One thing that... Prince had a lift in his own house. I find that extraordinary. Imagine getting a lift in your own house.
I think, sadly, when he died, he was found in his lift, I think.
Oh, was he? Oh, that was a bit of the story that most people...
So the world was weeping. And you were like, he's got a tragic premature loss to this genius. He's got a lift. Hang on. It's his house. Hang on, I'll read this again. This is in his house.
Welcome to the fourth floor for Prince's toilet.
There's Elvis dying on the toilet. Mm-hmm. Is that an urban myth or is that...
Is that an urban myth? It's true that these things they do, you just accept them as true without questioning it. That's why I think that is in the urban legend sort of territory, isn't it? Because I've never really had any evidence of that.
No, nor will anyone ever present you with any evidence.
And quite often it's that they didn't actually... And normally when you watch a documentary about something or whatever, a lot of it is just dispelling urban myths.
Yeah.
So it'd be, Julius Caesar did not invent the Caesar salad. or whatever, you know what I mean? It'll be quite... Those things... So it'll probably be that Elvis... That didn't happen to Elvis.
And people always say in the post-mortem they had to remove 500 burgers from his colon and stuff like that.
is that part of the urban myth or is that in the documentary?
No, that's part of the urban myth. Is the idea that he was kind of he died because he just had so many burgers in his gut and he needed the biggest shit in the world and it killed him.
was actually so big that ended up forcing him through the roof of his own toilet.
He broke his neck.
Well, no, he actually died because his head went through the ceiling, and his head and the floor above him was the swimming pool. He drowned. I remember a story about some boys that broke into a paper factory, then decided to stay the night and fell asleep in a machine. And then the next morning, they turned on the paper machines.
Never go to sleep in a machine.
And it's how you teach lessons, like never fall asleep in a machine. And the next day, there was thousands and thousands of sheets of paper, each of which was just a sort of cross-section of their faces, so that you could actually... It performed this incredible detailed scan of their face, sort of chopped through.
Something to you like an MRI.
like an incredibly accurate MRI, but of course far too late to actually do anything to, you know...
Diagnosis, death.
Diagnosis, broadsheet.
And... Of course, the newspaper owner that day had actually less blood on his hands, though, than your average day in a Murdoch-controlled newspaper.
Pow!
Ladies and gentlemen, please pray silence for a moment of satire.
Jonathan Swift.
Holding institutions to account.
Mark Twain.
Speaking truth to power.
Chaucer.
A core part of any healthy democracy.
Chumbawamba.
Can our jokes actually change government policy? Of course they can.
Quiet, please respect this important mode of humour.
Feels like our satire jingle is getting too much use, if anything.
But of course, urban legends is that's how you teach people basic rules. Never fall asleep in a machine. Never go to the toilet in someone else's home.
Don't freeze your own head.
Never freeze your own head. There's a whole load of them which are, my friend went to South America... he did a piss in the Amazon, came home. He thought everything was fine. He just thought one of his eyes had gone all milky. But turned out his left eye was actually, had been eaten and replaced with a tarantula egg. He went to the optician to help. And when the optician said, can you read the top letter? He went, and the optician said, it's not, it's actually F. Turned round, but it's too late. 50 tarantulas had burst out of this guy's eye socket.
Devour the optician.
They took that optician to school. They forced him to...
They forced him to make some glasses for all eight of their eyes, didn't he? The eight eye glasses.
Pro bono.
Yeah, see, those kinds of stories happen, don't they? What are the other ones? They're generally quite macabre, aren't they? They never have a happy ending. They're always, like, grisly. I mean, just looking on Wikipedia, just the names of the famous ones, like... The babysitter and the man upstairs.
Oh.
I don't think that wouldn't have ended well. The bell witch. Oh, here's a good one. Ben drowned. Ben drowned, also known as Ben in capitals drowned.
Ben!
Or Ben drowned. Or haunted Majora's Mask. Is a fictitious psychological horror series that originated as an alternate reality game created by American author Alex Hall in 2010.
That doesn't sound like an urban legend. It sounds more like a novel.
What are you Googling?
I know, this is the Legend of Zelda, Majora's Mask.
What? That's a computer game.
After a quite haunted... No, it's this is a film about a haunted Nintendo or something. This isn't right. I remember there's an urban legend I remember hearing about, which I never got quite right, but it's something about you're driving along the motorway, you hear a weird noise on the top of your car, you stop.
Hmm. Oh, that's quite, yeah, this is good.
You go to a service station, have a shit. The flush doesn't work.
You need a turd in a bag on the regional manager's office at the service station.
Yeah, no, but it involves, you turn around, you look at your car, and there's a dead dog's head on the car. That's the end.
That's the end.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact story. Yeah,
sometimes they involve someone going to an awful lot of trouble to wellies up someone.
This does feel like a good opportunity for people to email in their own local urban legends. That's what I'd like to hear some.
Yeah. We want alien abductions, missing hitchhikers. What have you got?
I'm just looking up some good ones on the Wikipedia here. The Catman of Greenock.
Is this another computer game?
He's the urban legend since the 1970s of a man in Greenock, Scotland, who eats rats with his hands.
Surely with his mouth.
How can you eat something with your hands? He earned the name Catman due to rumours that he lived with and cared for a group of wild cats. He's got... There's some light and shade with that guy, isn't there? This is quite a good one. The Choking Doberman.
Go on.
Is an urban legend that originated in the United States. The story involves a protective pet found by its owner gagging on human fingers lodged in its throat. As the story unfolds, the dog's owner discovers an intruder whose hand is bleeding from the dog bite. The intruder is then arrested by the police. The owner of the dog, having rectified things to his liking, decides to have a celebratory shit in his toilet, only to discover that the flush mechanism isn't working.
This is a horrible episode.
That wasn't our fault, I'd say, because that's the fault of the collective unconscious that actually from which these things bubble up.
Yeah, and whoever put urban legends into the bean machine.
Tabby from Edinburgh. Do you know what I heard about Tabby from Edinburgh? Okay, time to read your emails. Somebody has sent in a version of our email jingle. I just want to say, I really appreciate we really appreciate the email jingles. But you can also do versions of some of our other jingles.
Mm.
I'd like a listener version of the Patreon jingle. That would be good.
Okay.
I'd like a listener version of the Bean Machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like a listener version of Provincial Dad Chat.
Golly.
Pompadou
section. Yeah. But I don't want to discourage you from doing it. But do you see the horns of the dilemma I'm on?
I think you've expressed yourself very clearly, Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
The gauntlet is thrown. Let's see what comes our way.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one is from Jack from Bristol. He says, "Dearest Beanos, please find attached my a cappella Ewan McCall folk-style singing rendition of your email jingle."
Mm.
The recording is punctuated quite nicely at the end by the sound of my three-year-old slamming the kitchen door behind her as she came in to see what I was up to. Much love, Jack from Bristol. I've listened to this one already. It is fantastic.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before. When you send an email, this represents progress, like a robot shoeing a horse. Give me your hoof, my beautiful horse.
Very firm slam from that three-year-old.
What a set of pipes on Jack as well. Lovely.
What I love about it is that I like the idea of the email jingle making its way into the folk canon of the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
But I hope now in like 300 years' time there'll be sort of folk performances of of this old ditty.
It'll become a standard, a folk standard.
In a windswept Cornish pub.
Exactly.
You'll go in there, you'll be out of the cold, hunkering down, and next to the fireplace.
That's what they'll sing the next time, a postman has been swept into sea.
Yeah. Yes. They will stand somberly on the harbour.
When you send an email.
A Cornish choir. So thank you, Jack. That was fantastic.
He delivers post for the prawns now. That's what they say, isn't it?
Parcels for the scallops. And sorry you weren't in for the haddock.
The Derby issue runs on, the Lille issue runs all on.
Ah, yes.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Paul emails, "Dear Beans, as a proud and homesick Derbyan, temporarily living abroad, I was initially thrilled to hear you mention Derby on the podcast, only for that joy to quickly turn to rage
as you
repeatedly drag our good city's name through the mud."
Oh, God, sorry, Derby.
A few points.
Whilst we don't have the Houses of Parliament or an underground tube network, we do have the second highest perpendicular church tower in the UK.
Perpendicular?
I don't know what that means. Aren't all church towers perpendicular?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't use that as a selling point. I mean, that's... Yeah, it's perpendicular. Is it the tallest from the ground up or from sea level up?
Second tallest.
Yeah, is it the second tallest from the bottom of the spire up or from where up? He hasn't specified where he's starting measuring it from.
Okay, well, maybe Paul can get back to us with some more information about the perpendicular church tower. He also writes, if Derby was so shit, do you think Robert Lindsay would have allowed himself not only to be born there, but to continue to live there until the age of 17?
That is pretty bulletproof.
This is a bollocking, I think, basically.
No, it's fair enough. I've got nothing against Derby. I've never even been to Derby.
Is it a bollocking accepted?
I think it is already, even before I've heard all of it. Bollocking accepted. Bollocking accepted, but now let's just sit back and enjoy the bollock. You know what I mean?
Well, that's all the bollocking you're getting. Then he bollocks me lightly.
Okay.
He says, I'm starting to think that due to Ben's recent squirrel attack, that perhaps him hitting an owl with his car was not an accident. And in fact, a case of a time-travelling BP seeking vengeance against innocent members of the animal world.
Mm.
Interesting theory.
Very interesting theory.
An apology for Henry's unfounded remarks about Derby and Ben's owl murder would really help smooth things over with the mayor of Derby and the Darblettes.
I'm happy to totally apologise and retract it, but at the same time, can I do that and also in the same time say that I will probably carry on slagging off Derby?
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And I've apologised again and again for murdering that owl.
Yeah.
Every night I scream it into the heavens. And so I don't need to apologise to you, Paul. I'm sorry.
Can I quickly say something? Last night I was out on the town...
watching Phantom?
Well, yeah, obviously. I was out and about trying to meet some chicks last night.
Right.
Went down the owl bar, turned a few heads.
Next email is from Cassandra.
Yeah.
Dear Beans, back in 2011, I visited Derby with my grandmother to do some genealogy.
That's like a fun trip.
It was my first time in the UK and the first place we went to after landing in the country.
Oh, no, where's she from?
Well, she says, I'm from the rural Western US. So Derby was pretty busy compared to what I'm used to.
But this is, can I say, this is a classic thing which happens. You meet people in America and they'll go, oh yeah, my family, I'm so proud, I'm so happy, I'm so, my family are from, and it'll be somewhere that, and they'll be like, we're going to visit next year, it's going
to
be amazing.
Henry, are you about like to slag town off Derby, having just apologised for slagging off Derby not a minute ago?
And they're like, I'm visiting Derby, I'm going to spend like 3 months there, we've booked an Airbnb in central Derby. And you have to say to them, oh yeah, it's going to be amazing, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be like every day I'll like wake up and I'll like be in Derby, I'll look out the window at Derby, I'll go for like a Derby walk, and like, it's going to be 3 months of just pure Derby. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Have you ever had that experience?
Sort of, yes. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Cheers.
Well, she writes, the first place we ate at was Nando's, which I think was pretty fortunate, she says. And I think you're right. Can't go too far wrong in a Nando's.
No. Yeah, agreed.
There was also a Chinese buffet we went to that was awesome. So,
okay.
That's the impressions from abroad. So not, you know, quite positive.
So Nando's in a Chinese buffet?
No big genealogy reveals there. But a couple of decent meals.
Yeah.
Oh, no, someone's at the door. I hope it's not the bloke. Hang on.
Here's a pompadour for the listeners. Mike has had to go and ask the door to a carpet fitter who was meant to arrive in 10 minutes' time, but he's arrived early. And now Mike's going to have to do his humiliating job in front of the carpet fitter. Isn't he?
doing Three Beans Loud in front of the carpet?
Yeah, I mean, that's a heinous situation.
That's amazing. Also, now Mike's not here, I think I can say this. I don't know why he's getting a carpet fitter around. I don't think it's necessary. I think his moustache looks fine at the moment.
Ha 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 ha
Mike.
Hello.
We've come up with a theory that you're a bit worried that you're going to have to do your job, which is three bean salad today, in front of a man who's got a real job, which involves laying down carpet.
That's what's happening. There's a man in my house right now. And I found myself, I wasn't quite sure to say, I found myself telling him that I was on a work call.
Yes, you can't see how you're doing. You are anyway in a work call.
No. So, Mike, if you want, we're near the end of the episode, if you wanted to say things like, yes, I'm all over that account, and things like that, instead of having to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So thank you to everyone who signed up on the Patreon. Go on there.
Yeah, I'll call the Danish, no trouble.
patreon.com/3beansalad.
Jakarta, probably.
Add free episodes.
On the 18th.
Also, we do a monthly bonus episode where you can hear even more of us talking about the topics we've talked about.
5 mil minimum.
And if you sign up for the Sean Bean tier.
Mustard, please.
You can get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge where Mike was last night.
Yes, I was, yes. I was in the Sean Bean Lounge.
Can't hear you, mate.
I was in...
What was that? Can't hear you.
That's right, I was in the Sean Bean Lounge. In the business executive suite. Heathrow Terminal 12.
Say mine's an Itsu. Mine's an Itsu.
Mine's an Itsu. Is that what they say?
Like that. Yeah, that's a good one.
And of course, Mike, it was the...
what was it? It was the...
Was it the reptile buffet?
It was the reptile buffet. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report, which needs to be on my desk at 9 a.m. tomorrow. There wasn't an amphibian hash slinger in sight last night at the Sean Bean Lounge because Sean Bean loungers were queuing up to present their most culinarily gifted reptiles to present their most mouth-watering buffets to Sean Bean himself at the Sean Bean Lounge Reptile Buffet. Garrett Chamberlain's Asian Pipe Snake opened the event with a delectable Aztec burger smorgasbord. James It's My Birthday Stern's youngest Mamba presented a finger food goulash trestle table, and Curdy Kenyon's medium chameleon bowled onlookers over with a Hams of Slovenia breakfast buffet. Unfortunately, Natalia A's neotropical ground lizard ate its own Swabian giblet board, bloated considerably, was mistaken for Sammy Dobson's Pit Vipers buffet hamper, and was tasted to death by Andrew Brown, who'd volunteered as Sean Bean's poison tester. Conrad the One Cat, a long-standing friend of the Pit Viper, raised a concern that the Pit Viper's buffet hamper hadn't actually been properly assessed, and declared himself an independent adjudicator. This riled Josh McLalick's Fiji-crested iguana, who everyone knows has a profound dislike of authority figures of any stripe, and led to an argument that led to the iguana tail-flicking a stargazy pie off Ella's Boa's Cornish-themed Foods That Look At You buffet at Conrad the One Cat, missing him but glancing off Phil Murray's Lassited special event Spats, and destroying Dijah Barnes's Gecko's buffets inside a giant Blancmange buffet. Blancmange splatter disrupted the setup of the lizards of Bradley Gray, Alison Waterfield, and Simon Edwards, brackets earless, legless, and strapless, respectively, close brackets, all of whom retaliated in kind, and in moments the air was filled with volley upon volley of Volavants, finger foods, carrot batons, some of the smaller crocodilians, and Nick Horton. James cowered behind an upturned molecular gastronomy buffet, but this was a mistake, as it was the product of 5 years of intensive research by Mark Hoffer's Imperious Python, who blamed James for the upturning and crushed him into jam. Not actual jam, but the word jam, because he was trying to spell the word James out of the smushed James, but ran out of letters. Mistaking the mess for his own James, James Carruthers' pig-nosed turtle disabled the brakes on Emily's Agama's pork vegan fusion lunch wagon, in an attempt to wreak further havoc on Hoffer's Python's stricken buffet. But the wagon swerved uncontrollably over the tail of Alex Marple's Cayman, which reflexly bit off Swede Heed's Wart Snake's buffet cardigan, which lurched in surprise into Catherine Chorley's Anaconda's sausage sombrero, which caused Josh O to blaspheme, which caused Sean Bean to throw him out on the spot.
Elsewhere, Dan Tarantino's Colubrid's Huel Salad Bar was a hit with Emily's skink, but otherwise loathed. Charlotte Buxton's Burrowing Asp was accused of buffet plagiarism, with an obvious copy of Kaff Anderson's Gary Oll's All-You-Can-Eat Curd Buffet from 2019. But the winner was Natalie Dwyer's Monitor Lizard's interactive Hunt Your Own Spider Buffet. Congratulations, and thanks all.
Okay, that's the end of the show. We're going to play out with a version of your theme tune sent in by one of you, the listeners. This is from Andrew in Leeds. He writes, this is 12-bar blues acoustic guitar.
Ooh.
Recorded in a slightly breezy garden with a blackbird for accompaniment.
Holy moly.
Sounds absolutely lovely.
Ooh, lovely.
Paul McCartney himself could only dare to dream.
Indeed. So until next time, farewell.
Cheerio. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.